Scott Chang, right? His title is Greenhouse Gas Emission as Affected by Land Cover Tribe and Agroforestry System.
Thank you. And all right, I'm pleased to have the opportunity to share with you some of our work on agroforestry systems. First of all, to acknowledge the co-authors, Mark Kimfo, he was the PhD student on the project, so he did all the work. And I'm here to present Edward Bork and Kim Kalau, co-authors on this paper. We all know that agriculture is a really important source of anthropogenic greenhouse gas, sources of greenhouse gases, including CO2, methane, and nitrous oxide. I mean, you heard a lot about these in this session already. In Canada, in 2014, agriculture contributed 732 megatons of CO2 equivalent in terms of anthropogenic greenhouse gas emissions, and about 10% of that was coming from agriculture. So obviously that's not anything trivial, and that points out to the opportunity to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in agricultural production systems or in agricultural operations to contribute to mitigating climate change. So one of the things that's been proposed as being really effective ways to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in agricultural production systems is to practice conservation agriculture, including things like no-till, including crop residue return, and agroforestry has been mentioned in one of these conservation practices to mitigate greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture. Just in case that you're not familiar with the term agroforestry has been defined as a system where woody perennials and crops and or animals are being put together in the same space or sequentially over time. And so there will be a lot of interactions between the different components, including ecological and economic interactions. The pictures presented here obviously are mostly referring to the ecological interactions between the trees and the crops that's been putting together, including nutrient cycling, greenhouse gas emissions that have been plotted here on these diagrams as well. So the question is, agroforestry is being really widely practiced in Canada and across the world, but we don't really know a lot about the influences on greenhouse gas emissions. So the objective or the objectives of this research are threefold. We wanted to determine CO2, methane, and N2 emissions among different agricultural systems, as well as among the different land use types or land cover types within each of these agricultural systems in central Alberta. And secondly, to examine the sensitivity of source CO2 emissions to temperature changes among the agricultural systems, as well as between the land use types. And number three is to assess the global warming potential of the agricultural systems and land cover types based on their microbial greenhouse gas emissions from those systems. So we are looking at three different agricultural systems, namely hedgerow, shelter belt, and silvopastoral systems. So the three systems that have been pictured over here. The hedgerow essentially is native vegetation that still exists in the boundary of people's farms, fields, and so it's community-wise it's more complex. And silvopastoral systems is referring to widely spaced trees where grazing is occurring underneath the trees, so we have both pasture and trees existing together. Shelter belt is typically planted. In the function, most of that is obviously to reduce wind speed, to trap snow, and so forth. So a lot of ecological benefits with shelter belt and hedgerow obviously have really similar functions as well, but the I guess the origin of these two systems are somewhat different. So we'll be comparing among these three agroforestry systems. Within each of them, we will be comparing the forested portion of the agroforestry system versus the annual crop, if we compare the hedgerow and shelter belt systems or silvopasture systems with adjacent grazed rangeland ecosystems. So mainly to compare the effect of the trees, including the trees in the ecosystem. So we had 36 different sites with 12 sites for each of these agricultural systems, and obviously within each system we had two land cover types that we are comparing with. The 36 sites were widely distributed, that covers across about 250 kilometers north-south and about 250 kilometers south east-west as well. And so this is where it's been located within the province of Alberta. So in the next series of graphs, I'm going to present the data on CO2, methane, and N2O across 2 years of data. This one is on CO2, presenting the interaction between agricultural systems and land cover type. In the 2013 data, it seems to be much simpler. We didn't find any agricultural system or land cover type interaction with the time of sampling. And so the interaction between the agricultural system and land cover is being presented over here. Essentially, it's showing that there was no significant difference between the land cover type within the shelter built system, but in the hedgerow and silvopastoral system, we have significant differences between the forested land cover and the agricultural land cover. So the agricultural land cover is being referred to as the herb land, referring to both annual crops and the great range land. So in total, it's been called as a herb land. So we see that the total soil respiration was greater in the forested land cover in the hedgerow and was the reverse in the silvopastoral system. I think one of the main reasons is that in the silvopastoral system, we have a grass vegetation, and that's known to have really large root system, really strong respiration. So most of these, this is the total soil respiration, most of these CO2 emission was coming from autotrophic respiration. The 2014 data is a bit more complex, so we find agricultural system by date of sampling, interaction. Some the two key messages coming out of here is that we see really strong seasonal variability, really large CO2 emissions in the middle of the growing season, obviously was controlled by the temperature changes over the season. The second message is consistent with the 2013 data, hedgerow and silvopastoral system tends to have greater CO2 emissions. In 2014, we also found land cover type by date of sampling interactions, and so that's being presented over here. Essentially, the interaction was caused by, in some of the samplings, we didn't see any differences, but in other samplings, we see differences between the land cover type. Generally speaking, it's consistent with the 2013 data as well. Seems to be generally to be higher in the forested land cover than in the herb land. Now move on to the the methane emission from these agricultural systems. In 2013, again, the data set seems to be simpler. We didn't find significant interactions between agricultural system with the data of sampling. So, and not even interaction between agricultural system and land cover type in 2013. So the main effects of agricultural systems is being presented over here. We are talking about methane uptake or oxidation rather than emission. And so similar to the earlier presentation that in those upland ecosystems, we typically find methane uptake or oxidation. The uptake rate was higher in the silvopastoral systems than in the hedgerow, and the lowest was in the shelter belt system. And land cover type effect, when we have the forest vegetation, the potential for methane uptake was much greater as compared to the herb land or the annual crop production system or the grazed rangeland system. In 2014, again, was much more complex. We found agricultural system by date of sampling effect. Again, two key messages over here. The one thing is that there were really large seasonal variability, but comparing to the CO2, the methane uptake tends to last longer. It didn't taper off as quickly as a CO2 emission. And the second message over here is similar to the 2013 data, the methane uptake tends to be higher in the silvopastoral system and this hedgerow system. And again, the shelter belt system had the lowest methane uptake in 2014. Interaction between land cover type and date of sampling, really similar. The key message here is, again, in the forested land cover type, we observed really high rates of methane uptake as compared to the herbland. Moving on to the N2O emissions. N2O emissions seems to be the most complex, and we all understand that N2O emission has really large spatial and temporal variations. So in 2013, we found agricultural system by date of sampling interaction. The key message that we can get out of here is that N2O emission tends to be high in the middle of the growing season. So maybe there is a strong temperature control here as well. The second message here is N2O emission tends to be higher in some cases significantly higher in the hedgerow and the shelter belt system, and the lowest was in the silvopastoral system. And we think part of the reason of that was in the hedgerow and the shelter belt system, we are dealing with agricultural production, and in the agricultural part of the land cover type or the part of the agricultural system, obviously there were fertilization, and so those fertilizers would have contributed to the greater rate of N2O emissions. Significant interactions between land cover type and the date of sampling for the soil N2O emissions as well in 2013. And the key message here is really that for some sampling dates, there was not significant differences between the land cover type. But the key thing is in the middle of the growing season, we had really high N2O emission rates in the herbland, and again consistent with our understanding that there were nitrogen fertilization in those herbland systems. So I'm not going to talk about the 2014 N2O emissions. It's really similar to the 2013 data, and I'm running out of time. So this is the soil temperature sensitivity of soil CO2 respiration. Interactions between land cover type and agricultural systems in 2013. There was no significant difference in 2014, so I'm not going to present that. And the key message here is that for hedgerow and the shelter belt system, the CO2 respiration, the temperature sensitivity was significantly higher in the herbland, and that's understandable as well because we have a lot of disturbance, and those tends to increase the temperature sensitivity of the CO2 respiration. The last data slide on the global warming potential here is to indicate that if we look at the global warming potential based on microbial mediated greenhouse gas emissions, so the CO2, we are only looking at the heterotrophic respiration. The main contribution of the global warming potential was obviously coming from CO2, followed by N2O. The methane had really little contribution. And the end story here is that the global warming potential, if we look at the agricultural systems, the silvopastoral system has the lowest global warming potential based on the greenhouse gas emissions. And the herbland had the higher global warming potential as compared to the forest system. So we can conclude the presentation that within agricultural systems, the forest area had greater CO2 emissions, but this is based on the total CO2 emission. But if we only look at the heterotrophic respiration, actually the forest ecosystem or the forest part of the land use had actually lower CO2 emissions. The forest area could mitigate climate change by reducing N2 emissions and increasing the the methane sink. CO2 emission had a greater temperature sensitivity in the croplands and the great rangeland because of the more disturbance that we received on these land cover types or land use systems. And the silvopastoral system relative to the hedgerow and the shelter belt system and the forest land cover relative to the herbland had a lower global warming potential. So the key message here is that if we can expand the forest vegetation in the agricultural landscape, there is potential to reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have time for one question. One question? No question?
That's a good question. I guess the last point essentially mentioned that. I mean, this talk obviously is focused on the CO2 or on the greenhouse gas emissions, but we do have to consider the uptake or the biomass production, carbon that's been putting away in the biomass.